So good morning, and as Aisha said, this is a little early. We're about a half an hour early on the talk because today, all afternoon, there will be different Buddhist teachers and meditation teachers giving presentations up at the Church of St. Paul and St. Andrew on 86 and West End Avenue. This is the annual Meditate New York City, which is presented by the Buddhist Council. So it's all the different Buddhist groups get together and their organizing function. So you're invited to attend, and kind of at the last minute I realized, why are we rushing? Why are we... We were all going to jump and get all the cushions and get uptown, and so I thought maybe it would just give us all an extra half hour. So you too will have an extra half hour, whether you're going or not. And doesn't that feel good? It's like, you know, when they fall back, when we get that extra hour, it's like, oh, this is so exciting. So I'm offering you an extra half hour today. And these days are filled with such anxiety, you know, in terms of the financial crisis that's going on, the credit crisis. And some of us haven't really quite felt it yet or actually opened the envelopes that have arrived, the statements of your IRA. It's like, I don't want to open that. I don't want to look there. But many people are very much on the edge, particularly young people who are just starting out looking for work, and many people who for various reasons will have a really difficult time. And also, I think all of us, regardless of we don't really know what is going to happen to us financially. We don't really see that yet. I have to stop and listen to this incredibly beautiful sound on someone's cell phone. It would be good to do that in the midst of this crisis. But it is a chance for everyone to really kind of take stock and look at what really matters. I think that is probably the most important thing that is happening, is that a crisis like this forces all of us to stop for a moment and say, what really matters in my life? If everything were taken away, what would matter? And I think there's a kind of sense that we want to be more simple, have a simpler understanding of our lives, a kind of downsizing in terms of what we think is important. And as I look at, you know, this is the time of year when all the fundraising letters start coming into our mailboxes, and what do you care about? What's important to you? Whom do you give to? How can you continue to be generous? And one thing that I ask myself is, why is it that it's always the poor people that give the most? They give the most to their temples and churches and synagogues. Why is that? You know, I often talk about the very few experiences I've had of street retreats. I mean, I admit that I don't go out on them all the time, but you'd think so from the way I talk about it. But it's such a strong experience. But what one observes when one is panhandling is that it is the poor people that give you money. It is the immigrants. It is people who are on the edge and who understand what that is. And it's quite amazing. So somehow, in that simpler life, in that space of poverty, there's a quickening of understanding reality as it is and the needs of others. And somehow, when we get more and we become more comfortable, it's much easier to forget about others. So in all the traditions, there's a kind of appreciation of poverty or simplicity in that way. And today what I'd like to talk about is a koan, a Zen story, a koan that points to this. It's called The Poor Monk, Seizei, the Poor Monk. So a monk asked Master Sozan, and of course so many koans began that way, a monk asked so-and-so, such-and-such, and then the teacher responds. But this one, a monk asks Master Sozan, I am poor and destitute. I beg you, teacher, help me and make me rich. And Sozan looks at this monk, whose name is Seizei, and says, Venerable Seizei? And Seizei says, Yes, teacher. And Sozan says, Having tasted 3 cups of the best wine of Sagan, how can you say that your lips are not yet moistened? So that's the koan. That's the story. And there is a commentary on it by Master Mumon, who says, Seizei assumed a condescending attitude. What is his intention? Sozan has a penetrating eye and saw through Seizei's mind. Be that as it may, tell me how the Venerable Seizei could have drunk the wine. And then, as is traditional in this particular collection of koans, Mumon has a commentary which I just read you, and also a verse. And his verse is, His poverty is like Hantan's, his spirit like that of Ku. With no way of earning a livelihood, he dares to compete with the richest of men. So, we don't know much about this guy named Seizei, other than his name, really. But the fact that he's been named means that somehow he had some kind of... I mean, this took place in the Tang Dynasty, so it's a long time ago for this name to have persisted to this room right now. And Sozan was a very famous Zen master. He was a successor of Master Tozan. Also, you may know him as Dongshan. And he was a brilliant and yet very subtle teacher. So when we work on koans, what we like to do is just kind of look at the situation as a whole. I am poor and destitute. I beg you, help me and make me rich. What do we mean by poor? I am simple. I am humble. I don't have much. I have nothing extra. It's part of the whole kind of Zen aesthetic, really. Not overflowing, not ornate, but rather very simple, very plain, very honest. In Japan, they have an expression about this kind of quality in art called wabi. I think some of you may have heard that, wabi. Poverty that is greater than riches. A kind of Hisamatsu, the aesthetician from the early 20th century, called it sublime austerity. take a moment and think of your life instead of I'm going to be so poor, but instead I'm going to be experiencing sublime austerity. Does it feel a little better? Sublime austerity. And you know, when the art of tea developed in Japan, there grew a whole appreciation of the most simple qualities. The roughness of a pot, of a tea bowl. So this is my favorite tea bowl. Those of people who have my attendance know that this is my very favorite tea bowl. And that's because a piece of carbon fell on it when it was being fired. And it has what some people might call an imperfection here. But actually, it's what makes this very special. And the quality of the firing on this, the unevenness, the way this moves around in this way, not perfect, the kind of roughness. It's a Zen aesthetic, and they call that a poverty, simplicity. And a form of poetry that I'm very fond of is the haiku. A form that takes very little to say very much. Very little. It honors the kind of an austerity of expression. Basho wrote, I would like to use that scarecrow's tattered clothes in this midnight frost. It's one line. I would like to use that scarecrow's tattered clothes in this midnight frost. How much it says. We have the time of day. We have the time of year. Midnight frost. The scarecrow tells us kind of where we are. We're kind of in a field out in the country. And the tattered clothes that I'm willing to put on because I'm so cold and I don't have anything else to put on. All in that one line. All packed in to those 17 syllables. Or Issa wrote, my spring is just this, a single bamboo shoot, a willow branch. Again, time of year, and that kind of austerity, all of the things that you could look at about spring, particularly, you know, the peach blossoms or the plum blossoms or the cherry blossoms that we always evoke. And he says, my spring is just this, a single bamboo shoot, a willow branch. Everything in just that. Again, 17 syllables. And then Bucho wrote, less than 5 foot square, my thatched cottage. It is a nuisance to have to build even this, but the rain. Less than 5 foot square, my thatched cottage. It is a nuisance to have to build even this, but the rain. I love that one. So there is the rain, and we do need protection. But in Buddhist lore, you know, one of the six worlds that we transmigrate through constantly, we transmigrate through six worlds in our minds, world of suffering, the world of animals, the world of, but the one that is most interesting to me is the world of the gods, because it's where people have everything they need, and therefore, so tragically, they never enter the way, because they have everything they need, so they don't reach into what is real. My friend Gyoku Roshi Outen, who is the abbot of Zen Center of Los Angeles, was born and raised in Hawaii. And years ago we practiced together with Maizumi Roshi, and then after he died, we all were kind of figuring out where we're going to practice. And I said, well, why don't you start a Zen center in Hawaii? You know? And she said, you know, people are just too comfortable in Hawaii to practice Zen. The water is just too warm. The air is too warm. And it was a funny thing, because I had never visited Hawaii at that time. Later I did. This is always the signal from the Doan to shut up. But it is true that the more comfortable we become, and very often that means simply that the less in touch we are with our suffering, the less likely we are to really take on the commitment and the energy to truly see ourselves and our connection with the whole world. In China, we have the story of Layman Peng, who was a very wealthy businessman, and he studied Zen and decided not to ordain, but rather to live with his family. And at a certain point in his practice, he went out and took all his possessions, it is said, and put them on a boat, took it out in the middle of the river and burned it down. And that he and his wife and his son and his daughter lived alone in a thatched hut, just chopping wood and carrying water. And of course, it doesn't mean that we should go off and burn our things. It points to a quality of simplicity in our lives. It's so important to have. And I think that's why the story of Layman Peng has come down to us. But I don't think that's what Seizei the monk meant when he talked about poverty. I think he was talking about an utter emptiness of the self, where we no longer have some idea that we are something special or something fixed, but rather we have this sense of reality of the moment. This is me, and now this is me, which is different from that me. A very famous Enlightenment verse says, "Nothing of me remains when I pass. In speech and manner, I am free of dignity." Imagine being so free that you're even free of dignity. Huh? Just if we could just lay that dignity aside, just think how free we would be. If we didn't have to worry about this self that gets insulted and that has to be defended and protected. What a marvelous thing that would be, to be so empty, to be so poor, that we don't even have dignity. In Zen, often we talk about the mind as being a room that has no furniture in it, the free mind, the poor mind. a hut with nothing in it. So this monk Seize, he says, I am poor. Please help me and make me rich. So in one sense you could say that he was really asking for help, in another sense you could say he was kind of bragging. Huh? I'm so empty. So those are two levels that you can take that question on. So if he is looking at it from the perspective of kind of bragging about that, you know, I'm so empty, you know, it's the same kind of emptiness that we also, a poverty that we also find in Western traditions, a poverty equated with purity, lack of attachment to material possessions. In Christianity, poverty is a virtue. In Judaism, the choosing of less is a wisdom. So maybe Seize is asking for some approval here. Approve of me. But how can Sozan say something that would help him? Help me, he says. Can any words really help? Am I doing any more than offering confusion? There's a remark that's often made about there are three kinds of horses. The kind of horse that moves at the shadow of a whip. Have you ever ridden a horse, you know? And maybe you go to wave at someone and the horse thinks you're going to hit him and he jumps, starts to take off, you know. That kind of horse moves just at the shadow of a whip. And then there's the kind of horse that moves when you hit his flank. And then there's the kind that you really have to hit really hard. So, is it even necessary to explain anything to Seize? Is there anything that can be said? None of us really want to explain anything. Instead of saying something, Sozan shows him something. He shows him the answer. Please, teacher, help me and make me rich. Seize? Yes, teacher. Tons of koans that have this pattern. Calling and answering. It's immediate, intimate relationship. Calling and answering. Seicho! Yeah. Just like that. There was a very popular song in China during this time. And the song was about a young woman who would call to her maid. Not because she wanted her maid to come, because she wanted her lover who was on the other side of the fence to hear her voice. And I love that story because it, you know, that's what we so often do. We call out, or we say something, or we give a Dharma talk. But of course, that's not what it's about. It's about our gathering together and holding attention for half an hour. It's about our opening our hearts to the wisdom that we ourselves have. So, in a way, you know, my voice is calling out, but what is responding is not truly responding to my words, but to the situation. This calling and responding happens so often in koan sitting. Sensei, yes, teacher. So you're having tasted the finest wine. How could you ask me for help? How can you say that you're poor? So how did he taste the finest wine? That's what Mumon asks us. How did he taste it? Sozan brought him back to this moment and brought him back to himself. We sit here with all the riches that we need. Seiza, yes, teacher. You just tasted the finest wine. What is it to just be yourself? To recognize yourself as that which you are seeking. To engage each moment of your life fully. Not automatically, not defensively out of the endless conditioning that we've been subject to, but alive right now. Awake, to not be afraid of these times, of the loss of our riches, our jobs, our possessions, these things happen. To get in touch with that part of us which is so rich that it can be generous even in these times. So I encourage you to remember this koan when the fear comes up. Because the fear is separate. It's not your true nature. In each moment, you have everything you need for that moment.
And